Welcome to Pod Goddess, conversations with the kick-ass women of the podcasting world. I'm your host, Sibet Partee. This is our first episode, and today we are talking to Andrea Salenzi, the host of YOY, a podcast from Panoply that's about sex and relationships and the intersection of dating and technology. It's intimate, it's uncomfortable, it's challenging, it's really fun. It's super, super fun. If you haven't listened to it yet, you must. And there'll be some clips along the way during our interview where you can get a sneak peek. This is a podcast where I talk to all of my favorite women podcasters in anticipation of going to the Work It Festival in LA, an all-women's audio festival hosted by WNYC. I'll be there during the first week of October, and I cannot wait to share with you what I find there. But first, I'll be sharing with you these conversations I have with other women podcasters, asking them about what they're doing in their careers, why they love audio, what it feels like to be women in the audio industry, and how I can hopefully one day be one of those women too. Andrea has been in audio for a really long time. Before this, she was a producer on The Gist, and she went to the Salt Institute to learn about audio production. Before we start the show, I have to warn you that if it sounds like I'm on a call and Andrea's in the studio, it's because we did a tape sync. So we called each other to do the interview, but the mic malfunctioned on my end. But luckily, she got the recording of me calling her. So if it sounds like I have sort of a phone crackly voice and she has a fresh, nice studio voice, that's why. And I'm Sibet, by the way. Nice to meet you. And thank you so much for talking to me. This is really exciting.
Yeah, I'm so glad you get to go to Work It. It's such a good festival, and it's going to be really great this year.
I first asked her how she discovered podcasting and when she knew it was her medium.
Gosh, it's kind of hard to explain how I got obsessed with this. I think everyone's wired a little differently. Some people are really visual. Some people, you know, are really obsessed with words on the page. And I've always just been really drawn to the radio. So I think that goes back to, you know, listening to this old show called Loveline, which is probably way before your time, but it was like a sex advice radio show on, your alternative rock station back when we still had those. I think I was working on a magazine in college and discovered, you know, the 20 episodes of This American Life you could listen to online and got really obsessed with those. So it's I don't know. I'm just wired in a way where my happy place is listening to audio.
Because YOY is so personal, it's about you. Do you feel that might have been a reason why the podcast form was suited to you, even though you had already been in audio before?
I think I thought about it almost in reverse of that. So I'm such an obsessive podcast listener that I was paying, you know, extra attention to all the moments that caught my attention. And then when I was designing the show that I would want to do myself, I was thinking about how friendship makes me pay attention, how people talking to their family members mm-hmm. makes me pay attention. Love stories make me pay attention. Awkward moments make me pay attention. And I eventually kind of put that together into the show I would most enjoy making. So I don't think I ever thought of YOY as not a podcast.
So on the episode where you were just going on this date with Randy, essentially, you talked about how
it was not
weekends,
a date.
So a non-date date.
In my defense, Andrea did say this about going out with Randy.
I was starting to feel like loose, likable Andrea. On a date, taking a break from floral dresses, I signaled the bartender for another round.
But she's right. It wasn't a date. It was practice for a date she was supposed to have later that evening.
So we'll say this. You went on an outing. You had this outing. And you said on the outing that you cried every other weekend still about your boyfriend. And I wonder, what does that feel like? Ex-boyfriend. Oh, my gosh. Yes, ex-boyfriend. I'll focus on my semantics here.
Here's Andrea talking about her ex from the episode Going Out with Randy.
I just cry about my breakup probably like every weekend.
You do?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You got to get over it.
It'll just hit me. It'll be a thing
every
that I
weekend,
used to
though?
Do with someone, and I'm doing it alone.
How great was this guy?
Pretty great. I'm still allowed to be sad that he's not in my life anymore.
Okay. But every weekend?
He has a point. I shouldn't still be this upset. I should probably talk about it more. But hey, the questions are working, right? I'm being vulnerable with another person.
I'm wondering what that feels like to tell that to people. And do you feel like the podcast gives you
protection or that that is catharsis to say it.
I mean, I don't think it's... I don't know. I don't think I've ever... You know, I had an online journal when I was younger. I don't think I've ever held back from that kind of thing. We're doing these personal reveals as a tool for storytelling. And that's really different than doing them just because I feel compelled to share. You know, I think there's a version of the show that I don't think... Me sharing that detail isn't interesting unless you share that detail, you know, with a larger purpose.
Yeah. So, how do you know which details to tell? Like, are you thinking about that when you're recording?
I think it's, you know, at the heart of, I think it's a skill I've developed over time because I've said this before, I feel so grateful that I started the show later on because all of this is, my interesting meter needed calibration. You know, when I started out in podcasting, I went to the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies up in Maine. And there's a joke about that school that you can't fart in Maine without someone doing a story about it. And it's true that you have all these young storytellers arrive at that school and they're thinking in their heads, like, everyone's magical stories are beautiful. I just want to capture and document everything. And they kind of go out into Portland and then they slowly realize, like, oh, not everyone's interesting. Not every story is magical. And there's actually, you know, there's always a why behind what you should be doing. Why are you telling the story now? You know, what is the larger resonance of it? So when Randy's on this show, you know, that's a story I'm telling about the ways you make bad decisions when you feel vulnerable. That's a story I'm telling about a certain kind of a person who's like Randy, someone who... can prey on that vulnerability. So, and me sharing stories about my breakup, it's not just cathartic, like, oh, I'm compelled to share this information about me, because that would be so selfish. It's saying, you know, when you feel sadness, it makes you vulnerable to someone like Randy and their intentions with you.
How do you know when something's interesting, or how do you know when you're telling the right thing? Do you get this gut feeling now that you've been doing it for a long time?
I mean, you don't always know. I think you have to start down the path and then and see what's working and what's not. So I've worked on episodes that you will never hear because I realized, you know, they weren't about what I thought they were about, or you know, there was no, that they wouldn't necessarily be interesting to other people. And I think it got also calibrated by that Malcolm Gladwell idea of, you know, 10,000 hours of listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to pay attention to what shows work for you and why and what don't and where they lose you and when you turn on the host and all those little moments.
And, oh, yes, this is what you were telling him. You were saying to Mike on The Gist that you, when you're looking at episodes for YOY, you think, what are the most interesting conversations that I have with my friends and my family? And how do I then translate those into interesting stories? And so everything that you do in YOY seems to be deeply personal in a way that I don't really see in any other podcast. And I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, but I hear that in some other podcasts. You know, I feel like it's used as a tool to bring you in, you know.
Which podcasts do you think do it well?
Gosh, I'm just, you know, like, I feel like I know Tracy from another round. Like, she has that corny sense of humor.
Good.
She's always telling those, like, her jokes, like, her style. I don't know. I know about her dad. And you kind of catalog these informations like, oh, yeah, her dad did that one funny thing that one time. And you just feel like you know this person. And so I think you do listen both for the information that a podcast can give you, like, you know, we interviewed this artist or this writer, but then you're also listening, like, what will Tracy think of this?
Yes. And you love your host. And
yeah.
And how do you know that you're interesting or that you're a good host? When did you have the confidence to say, I can do this and people will find my voice, my personality compelling?
I don't. Well, okay. So, I think there's a difference between a host who's just like a naturally charming, fascinating person, and then what I'm doing. So I'm very much, I come from a producer background. I've been in audio for 10 years before starting YOY. So, you know, what I'm doing is very much the craft of, like, creating a podcast. And if you had me just live on a mic for an hour, I don't think I'd be that interesting. I'm not, you know, I know I've worked with hosts before who just sparkle. Like, I could listen to Mike Pesca talk, you know, all day long. He has this, like, wit and this energy, and my show is very much about The scenarios I create through who I, you know, the interviews that happen, you know, the editing decisions I make, the way I use music, the way I weave personal narrative in with like a real thing happening. I'm using all the tools available to try to craft something. And that's really different than being just a straight up interesting host. And there are a lot of really interesting hosts. So I don't think I'm that interesting, but I do think I'm using all the tools of podcasting to try to do something, to try to make a story happen.
When is the time that you have orchestrated a situation where you feel like it has really, really worked? And when's the time that you feel like, oh, I shouldn't have put these people in this situation, or I could have changed the way I did that?
Episode 3, I think, we set up this guy, David, and a friend of mine, Kate, on a first date. He had asked her out at the end of episode 1, and I set them up at a bar in Bushwick, 2 microphones, back in the garden, and just let them loose to have a first date. But the reality of first dates is that they are pretty boring.
Yeah.
The things you actually talk about aren't that interesting. I recorded a date years ago, and they just spent forever talking about, like, oh, yeah, when you go to a spa, they put cucumber in water. Water tastes better if you have cucumber in it. Have you ever had berries in water? Yeah, berries taste so good in water. And that's just not an interesting podcast. The way you make it interesting is you say, he looked at her this way, she looked at him this way. Then so-and-so across the, you know, the yard said this, and the bartender did that. And, you know, you kind of rise the stakes and editorialize. So I'm always a host with an opinion about what I think's going on.
It's making it cinematic rather than just raw audio.
Yeah. And then, you're also meddling just by being there. So I think that's an example of creating a situation to talk about a larger thing, which was, I guess the awkwardness of dates, I guess the presence of meddling. Can you make people fall in love by raising the stakes and saying it's for a podcast? You know, does that make it more interesting or not? You know, it also was unsuccessful in a lot of ways. Kate lined up another date right after that first one. And I had to decide, like, I don't know if I totally believe that she was doing that, because I've never done that before. I can't imagine lining up back-to-back dates. And I had thought she was fully in on this project. And then when the other guy showed up, it was so painful. Oh, it's still the most painful thing ever
Listen
to. And they were both named David. You can't, I don't know, you can't.
Oh, yeah. I did this show at St. Andrews where I studied abroad, where I put people on blindfolded blind dates. And I had these 2 first years who lived on the same hall, and I didn't know it just because they signed up through this form, accidentally show up at the same time, see each other on the date before. One girl liked the guy. The guy didn't like the girl. The girl, because she was blindfolded, fell on her butt during the date. They didn't say anything. She tried to kiss him afterwards, and then it spread all over the hall. And it was just awful. And so I'm looking for, like, that's really helpful for me, for someone. I like curating situations too. And I'm trying to learn how to do that in a way that is respectful and stimulating. And so that's comforting to know that you've had awkward moments as well when you're trying to curate a situation.
Oh, totally. That sounds so interesting.
And what's a time that you feel like you curated something really well and in a way that it surprised you?
Gosh, I've been doing these focus groups. So we did the single guy focus group, and we also did the single lady focus group. And I think both created a huge sense of bonding amongst the attendees, where at the end they felt like they got something really special out of it. And a lot of them are still friends. The guys in D.C. from one of the groups we did, Single Guys Who Want to Become Fathers Someday, they all go events now, although a lot of them have girlfriends already.
Oh, my goodness. That is so cute.
Yeah,
you're developing a community. Oh, my gosh. I love it. Part of this podcast is talking to women podcasters about what it's like to be a woman in audio, and something that is specifically interesting about YOY to me is that a huge reason for you starting this is an issue that is prevalent for all women wanting to have children. And that is something that guides our lives if we do want to have children, more so than men's usually. And how do you feel like womanhood plays a role in your making of YOY?
Well, I think my feminism is central to it. I feel... Yeah, I feel like dating's very broken right now, and there are a lot of things that go into that. I don't think more so than any time in the past, but maybe. I can't. Who am I to say? But in my personal experience, I feel like women were told, you know, focus in on your careers. Everything's going to be fine. Dating will work itself out if you just, you know, live your best life and be you. And I think once you reach a certain age, you start to discover that there's a huge maturity gap. So if guys are feeling like they're entering adulthood later than me, that means that there was a decade of dating where I was dating looking for a partner, and a lot of guys weren't necessarily looking for that long-term commitment and straight dating specifically. And then you arrive and you're like, oh, wait, I have this ticking clock. and where did the guys go? That's not an eloquent way of explaining it. But basically, I feel like because women are on a timeline and guys date as if they're not necessarily on a timeline, it operates really differently.
Do you think making the podcast has helped you on a journey to find a partner?
I don't know. I've only been doing it for a year, and I was newly single for a lot of it. So I think of them as really separate. I have my actual life, and then I have a podcast that I make. So that's like saying, does your job help you find a boyfriend? No, just my job.
That's so interesting, because as a listener, I feel like it's one of those podcasts where I feel like I know you. And not true.
Do you, though?
Yeah. I mean, a little bit. I mean, not...
No,
not,
you know a performance of me.
Yeah.
It's me turned up a couple notches. It's not me that's unedited, unscripted. It's not me.
And so when you show up to work, you put on this persona for the podcast.
I wouldn't call it a persona, but I'm saying I'm creating a podcast as my full-time job, but then I also have my actual life.
What is it like separating the two?
They blur in interesting ways. You know, I'll make an observation from interactions with my friends and family that'll inform something I do for the show. But, you know, the show will never be, here's exactly what I did this weekend. Here's exactly who I'm dating right now. Let me tell you about, you know, I'm only going to tell stories if I feel like they're essential to a larger thing that I'm doing. So this isn't my diary, although I will use elements from my personal life to inform the show.
Huh. Wow. As someone, like, I'm very interested in, like, you're in personality journalism. Like, you are putting yourself in the story. And I'm very interested in stories and talking to people and interested in the way I interact with them. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, how I might do that one day in my career. And it's like sort of thrown me aback to hear you say that it is so separate, when of course it is. And of course that seems like that's like a healthy way to live your life. But I, like, on the podcast, I would wonder, like, when you were talking about preparing with Randy for this other date, you canceled that date. And I wondered what it was like for that person potentially to hear the episode, and like how you think about curating that moment and thinking about, okay, what is he going to hear? What is the audience going to hear? Do you think about that, or do you have, or is it sort of an amped up personality that you can sort of set aside?
I mean, gosh, I just, you know, I, something that is really hard on me is I'll get a lot of emails from people who say, hey, Andrea, I'm in town. Do you want to get a drink or coffee? And and I have a pretty successful podcast, and I get those emails, you know, and those direct messages on Twitter. And you're right. Maybe I'm not doing anything on Friday and we could totally, you know, get a drink or get coffee. But I'm trying to have an actual life that is separate from the podcast. And I think that that's a normal expectation for me to have, that all of my drinks and coffees aren't with listeners, that they are actually with relationships that I have in my actual life. So I don't know. I think I've obviously set myself up for a situation where listeners think that everything is incredibly true all the time on my podcast, and rather than an actual story that I'm telling. So I don't, it's hard to blur those lines, but I think I have pulled the curtain back a few times, and I think I think it would be self-sabotage if anyone I ever dated just assumed it was all on the record and for the podcast. I think people should assume that I have a life that isn't on the show and that I'm not available for a drink on Friday.
Totally. Yeah. Huh.
Why do you think, like, this is, so we had some live events and listeners came up to me afterwards and they said, oh, Andrea, it was so fun to talk to you. Like, let's exchange phone numbers. And then there was another podcaster at the same event, Hrishikesh Hirway from Song Exploder. And they'd say, we're too intimidated to talk to him. And it's like, okay, so male podcasters are given, you know, the distance and privacy to say, oh, my gosh, I'm intimidated by him. I couldn't possibly ask too much of him. But multiple guys asked me out at the end of that show. So it's just like, I think you should assume that just by your femaleness that you're opening people to think of you as more loving and giving, more eager for friendship, more of just like an open door to support everyone around you. And they can't imagine that this is your job and you are there doing your job.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
You're right, because if you saw me and Hrishikesh in a room, who would you feel more comfortable talking to?
You. But maybe that's because
no,
I'm
me
also
too.
A woman.
I mean, I think he's really, really cool, and I would be really intimidated to talk to him, even though we're somewhat friends now. But I wonder how I can command that level of respect, and I wonder if I ever will.
Are there other women you feel like you would approach, like your listeners are approaching you?
I mean, I have great respect for other women in the field. But I'm sure they get,
or maybe in
I'm
another
sure
field.
They get more. I'm sure if you just look at, you know, take some time and look at the iTunes reviews of other women, and you know, the reviews are very much often personality judgments, you know, or they'll be really specific. I'll get the weirdest emails about my body. And, you know, that was never on the table. So someone said that I shouldn't ever consider dating Randy because I want to watch out for my fertility timeline. And if I had to do IVF, she knows that my cervix is very sensitive because I had difficulty getting an IUD on this show. And yes, I did record my attempted an IUD insertion, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you know what goes on inside of my vagina.
No.
And that should inform the decisions you think I should make in my dating life. So those are the kinds of emails that you can expect to get as a woman. And I know from other female podcasters who hit on childbirth perhaps in their show that is a part of what they hear in their inbox also. And I don't think you would expect to get that. I think other podcasters, especially male ones, are treated like artists and craftsmen. Nick Vanderkolk from Love and Radio. No one's ever going to ask him about his personal life. And yes, he's not offering it, but they would do an interview with him about his podcast. And I will never get an interview request that's like, tell us how you make YOY. The interview requests are always, tell us about dating today.
Yeah.
And Nick is never asked to be an authority on something other than just the making of his show. Even though that's the thing I'm actually the most interested in doing and the skill I've been developing for my whole career.
And now you're even talking to someone who like opened up, someone who wants to be in the field. And I opened up with personal questions rather than getting to the production questions. Like production questions I put second because I was interested in personal questions.
Right. And if you were interviewing Love and Radio, would you say, how do you balance, you know, your personal life and your job? No, the questions would be, I don't know, how do you pick your interview subjects?
Yeah, that is very true. Well, how do you pick your interview subjects?
Gosh, it's so fun because we get a lot of emails from listeners who have stories they want to tell. And it's kind of it's an amazing resource for us. So an interview I'm really excited about is a woman just shared a story about being ghosted by a guy after a date and then matching with him on a dating app a few years later and then them agreeing to go on a date, which you would think would be rare. Like, oh, wow, you went on a date. There was no follow up. And now you're going on another date again 2 years ago. But it is a phenomenon I've heard from multiple friends. So finally, those friends haven't necessarily wanted to talk about it. But finally, someone showed up in my inbox who's experiencing the story that I've been wanting to tell.
That's so interesting.
I think we have, you know, Lindsay and I have a sense of the stories we want to tell on the show, and then we kind of wait for the right voice to show up for them.
And how do you pitch stories? Do you write pitches before, like, hey, there's this ghosting story I want to talk about. I don't have the voices to speak about it right now. My friends don't want to come on the show. But how do, because it's a weekly show, because you're generating all this content all the time, how do you pitch that content?
Yeah, so we have a Google spreadsheet, and one is upcoming episodes, so we kind of know what we've already recorded, what tape. Then we have another page of it that's tape on hand, so we know all the different interviews we've done. And sometimes we'll do an interview and we don't necessarily know where it's going, so we just kind of log those. And then we have booking ideas, and those can be pretty broad, and then they can also be really specific. And so, for example, we know we're looking for ghosting stories, and then we just start a kind of a thread on Slack where we just start plugging in all the different ghosting stories we can find. So it kind of, sometimes it'll start topic specific. We'll fill in who the voices for that will be. Sometimes it'll go on for months. So we knew we wanted to do who's going to pay for a drink on a first date, who should pay for that for a drink. Mm-hmm. And so I interviewed the guy who was, saying men should always pay. And I thought that would be plenty. As the guy goes, guys should always pay. And I should go, women should pay. And we just debate it. And then I realized I wanted that there were all these other approaches. So there was a woman who said that women should always pay, just to like kind of test the tolerance of the guy. And then there was a woman who said that men should always pay because women have been so disadvantaged, and especially black women. And then there was there's one more approach. Oh, there's the one who said we should always split and it shouldn't be a big deal. So we kind of like, we kept doing interviews, and then I kept deepening, you know, what I thought about that approach over time.
Yeah. I thought that was so fascinating. The woman who said men should always pay, especially as her being a black woman, because women have been put at a disadvantage.
I think every single woman has had experiences with men that should make them second guess having to pay for anything for them anyways. Introducing that to a man is really important. And not just for the sake of not paying a bill. That's not what that's about. It's for the sake of understanding who I am as a woman.
I'd never heard that before. So I'm glad you stuck with interviewing all those different voices, because that was really cool to hear.
Yeah. We kept waiting to find the right people for it, and never really knowing, you know, we didn't know where we were, what we wanted from the get-go.
How do you find those people? Like, when you're searching for these people, are you listening to other podcasts, hearing other voices? Are you talking to an interesting friend and saying, like, hey, do you have someone who'd like to speak on this? Are you putting out listserv?
I think for the most part, Lindsay's looking through people who have already written on the subject. So someone who already has prepared thoughts on something. It's hard to approach, you know, writers or folks who haven't necessarily been thinking about it and then demand that they do for us, you know, because it's like, I don't know. Yeah, I would ask, like, for example, I had a friend coming to town and I was said, do you have any ghosting stories? He's like, yeah, it's happened to me. I've been ghosted. They never texted back. But he didn't have any thoughts about that beyond just, oh, yeah, it's happened.
Right.
So you need someone who's kind of synthesizing the themes and finding meaning in them.
Yeah. And what is the drafting process for an episode like? Once you've gathered all your audio, what is your approach when you're curating an episode? What's your first thought?
I think every producer will do it really differently. I kind of listen through all the tape and almost instinctively know the highlights. And then I isolate those highlights. I use a service called Trint to transcribe them. And then I start kind of writing around them. And that can be a very vocal process. So it's embarrassing to do it in an office, because it's kind of like you'll read a line and then kind of respond to it loudly and think of the funniest comeback. And then I'll play a draft of it for my editor, Hillary Frank. And so with Hillary, it's like I'm firing off the clips. I'm reciting my script to her. And we do it all over the phone or over kind of like a Google Hangout. Mm-hmm. And she'll usually be the one who figures out what the episode's actually about. So I'll be going down some path in the woods and she's like, oh no, this is the path you should have been on. And like, and she'll find elements of my story that told me that I should have known that the whole time. And then once Hillary helps me know what it was supposed to be about, then I'll write that in all caps at the top of my script. I'll say, this is an episode about, colon, and then I'll put in whatever she just told me it was about. And then I'll kind of go through the script again, figure out where I was wrong, you know, where I thought it was about the wrong thing, and then kind of make sure it all kind of points back to that larger idea. And then I'll try to make it funnier, tighter, cleaner, record it, mix it, and post it. And it's so fun that I have this kind of creative outlet every week to work on something. So coming up, hopefully tomorrow, is my episode about going on a boat cruise for the dating app The League. So Hillary will hear a draft of it, and she'll say, and she'll just, the last edit, she was just like, I thought of some better jokes for you. and that's the joy of an editor, is like, it can be that specific. But it also can just be very thematic. So my first draft of the League story with her, I had an interview with the founder of the League, and I was going on and on and on about, you know, it kind of goes like, oh, I'm getting ready to leave on the boat, but first let me tell you about who the League is and why they're hosting this boat cruise. And I explain all the observations I've made about the League, but you can't, it's almost impossible to listen to me talking about the League because you know I'm about to get on a boat, and like, how fun are boats? And I just want to hear Andrea on a boat talking to single people. So I scrapped the whole interview with the League founder, even though, you know, she's interesting and I enjoyed that conversation a lot, because it wasn't about like, here's the technological specifications of what makes the League different than other dating apps. It's about who the hell am I going to meet on this boat and what are they going to tell me?
Right. How do you prepare for an interview?
Well, Lindsay will do prep for me, which is awesome. So I kind of open up a prep that she does. And this is like a pretty standard process. I used to do this for Kurt Anderson when I interned at Studio 360.
Yeah.
It's like you have a link to an article and then you kind of copy and paste the highlight moments of it. Just kind of telling me what to pay attention to. But then sometimes, you know, the joy of working with someone who's funny like Lindsay is she'll pull in, you know, cool observations or weird YouTube videos or funny asides, relative statistics. And then I kind of look over that and I instantly know my questions. And I also try to be sure that I listen to the answers that the person's giving to my questions, because it can really change. I mean, you're doing this right now.
Mm-hmm.
It can change what you ask next. And the hardest part is when you're done and you're listening back to the tape, you're like, oh, why didn't I pay attention to that one detail?
Is there like a sort of headspace that you get into? How do you know that you get into, like, an interview is like a game, because like they're throwing a ball at you and you're trying to respond to the question, but also maybe trying to like throw in the other ball that goes with that you had thought of before. Like, you're rearranging the order of your questions based off of what they give you. That probably was a weak analogy. But is there some sort of exercise that you do to get pumped for the ball game?
Well, I'm probably like less, I mean, I was never very good at sports, and I'm probably not. You know, like,
yeah, I'm not either, so I don't know why we're going to, like, throw all these balls.
No, but I will drop the ball many times during an interview. Because my show is so edited, I feel really comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're Terry Gross, I think you're trying to really get somewhere with an interviewee. So if you were like, oh, my gosh, why? Let me – hold on. Give me a second. I need to look this up. That would interrupt the flow so much and
right.
the like connecting so much that it would destroy the interview. But for me, I'm like, wait, I'm sorry. I got to reword this, you know, like, or wait, I need to do this one thing.
Yeah. Or, I need to rephrase this question so it'll sound better.
Or, yeah. I'm going to look up this audio file so I can play it for you. You know, sometimes I'll just say, I'm just going to try this. I don't know if it's going to work. So it's like a very vulnerable, collaborative process so I can get what I want, because I'm hearing in my ears as they answer me what clips I'm going to use and
right.
how I would need them different or better.
Oh, yeah.
Which is – it's a less elegant skill. And my raw interviews would be way more boring than your actual normal interviewer, because I'm using it as a tool to do something else.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something I always wondered how Terry Gross could be so blunt about things. Like, someone could be like, yes, you know, my brother just shot himself and then my sister drowned, like, watching it happen. She's like, okay, and how did that affect you? And you're just like, what? How did you not have time to, like, breathe and pause and say I'm sorry and just like, oh. But, you know, that part's probably edited out too. That's as I started talking to more podcasters and making podcasts, I realized that all the NPR I'd listened to as a kid was not as well-composed as I assumed. I was like, these are perfect human beings who know how to answer and ask questions so speedily. How do they do it?
No, it's all the ums are usually removed. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, yes. Oh, my goodness. The first time I ever recorded me talking to somebody else, I realized how many times I say and how many times they do. And it took hours just to take out all the ums to make everyone sound like they know how to speak.
Like they're on NPR.
Yeah, exactly. Do you feel like you produce YOY different? Well, of course you produce YOY differently than you do the gist, but how do you produce YOY differently than you had the gist?
Oh, well, the main difference is that it gets to be scripted, right? So yep. Mike Pesca's scripts are kind of gobbledygook, you know, like, and if you were to look at my scripts, they're kind of gobbledygook too. Because I remember when I used to work with Pesca and I'd look at what he prepared for the day's spiel, it looks like it's a lot of like bullet lists and like partial phrases, random numbers. It'll be names of kings. It'll be, you know, like really random stuff kind of all in a document. And you could almost read it like words, but he's not thinking about spelling. He's not thinking about punctuation. All he's thinking about is just getting to the end of the spiel, and he knows in his head what he's doing. And yeah. Now that I'm working, it's I know on my own, like doing my own writing with him, I was producing, so I was mostly guest booking, you know, editing down a 40-minute interview into a 12-minute interview, you know, assembling the show, pulling clips from the news, things like that. But now that I'm doing the writing part, I realize how quickly I stopped caring about spelling.
Because
the thing is that you think of the line and you just want to stay in the zone of imagining the story. So I'm writing into tape. And as I hear that sentence in my head, I have to finish writing it. And if I go back and I think about, you know, because I know what that, like, I'm looking at my script right now. I spelled league, L-E-A-G-E-E. When I come to the studio to narrate that, I'm going to just see, oh, that was me typing quickly. I know that I meant the word league, and it's not going to trip me up. But if I had another week, I'd probably go through and make sure there isn't a space in the middle of the word suddenly. But it was like I was typing so quickly that it's just you got to get to the phrase. And no one's ever going to look at the script but me. So it's a really audio-based process. So I'm listening to the tape. I'm picking the order for it. I'm writing in and out of it. And then at the end, you have the script in front of you that no one's going to ever see. So why spell maximum, right?
Yeah.
Or who concierge. Do you
think? Concierge, yeah. Who knows how to spell concierge? How did you know, or how did you learn to write? Was that from Mike Pesca? Was that from undergraduate experiences? Was that from reading? How did you learn how to write for audio?
Well, that was a lot a process of the Salt Institute. So
yeah,
the Salt Institute, and I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend their program right now. I'm a huge fan of the shorter ones, like Transom, or like a Third Coast intensive workshop would be great. Even just attending the Third Coast Festival, even if just going through the Third Coast archives, there's a lot of great talks on there.
So good.
Yeah, there's a really good Nancy Updike about writing for radio.
Yeah.
And it's just a really different, you want to sound so conversational, and it's fun trying to get there.
Yeah. Yet be so produced at the same time.
Yeah. And yeah. And also I think it's a little bit giving myself freedom to deviate from the script. I think if I had really a clean edited script where everything is spelled right in full sentences, perfectly transcribed, maybe I'd stick more to it. And sometimes I'll try the line. So okay, looking at my script, here's the sentence. But this is Sophie's summer of love. She wasn't going to give up that easy. So if I were riffing in the studio, I might play the tape and change it a little. And instead of "but this is Sophie's summer of love," I'd just go, "This is Sophie's summer of love. She isn't going to give up that easy."
Yeah.
So I would make it more of like the way I would actually say that. So there's a line in the story where my friend says, "It was okay that we got on this boat cruise because I got to hang out with my favorite podcaster." And then I kept riffing this. I kept going, Ira Glass is here? And I thought that was so funny in the studio. But then when I got there, I realized that people are actually going to picture Ira Glass. They're going to be thinking about Ira Glass. They're going to be wondering why I think Ira Glass is his favorite podcaster. And it'll just pull us out of the moment. And instead, what you're supposed to be thinking is he goes, at least my favorite podcaster is here. And it's like, oh, we're friends. What a nice thing for him to say.
But I had a good time in a boat. I got to hang out with my favorite podcast host. And it was a beautiful night.
Oh, yeah.
So that riff line was funny to me in the moment, but it's not going to stick in the script.
Something that I like that you've been saying a lot is you're thinking a lot about what the audience is going to be picturing in their head, because audio is actually such a visual medium, because it allows you to conjure all the images for yourself, to always be thinking, oh, what is someone going to be seeing in their head when they're listening to this? Like, is the image of Ira Glass popping up going to be helpful for the story? No, even though, like, coming from another angle, you might think, oh, that's kind of funny. Like, was the image of Ira Glass in my head helpful in the moment? Another way to approach editing. That's really cool.
And I think you can, you know, I think one of the best tools for learning how to make a great show is listening to a ton of radio. So sometimes I'll be listening to a show and I'll get obsessed with an idea in that exact way, where it's just a throwaway line or throwaway detail, and it'll be so disruptive to my listening that I can barely move on, or it'll really cloud the way I hear the rest of the story. So I try not to do that to people, but it's not a perfect process either.
What is a show that you really like that you've listened to where you have an example of something like that that's taken you out of the moment?
You know, I think you hear hosts do this all the time. They'll go, you know, not as good as her other album, but whatever. And I'll go, wait, what's the other album? Or they'll go, you know, I'm a huge country music fan, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, but I'm talking to you about so-and-so. And I'll be like, oh, I gotta look up the other so-and-sos. Because it was not all they have to say is I'm a big country music fan. I love so and so, and then they're keeping me on track
with the so and so they're about to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. The other so and sos they only help if it's like I like country that's like so and so, so and so, and so and so, especially so and so. Then I'm thinking about that certain corner of music, and
right,
then I'm changing
right.
my mind. Yeah.
One of my major questions is, as a young student podcaster, someone who hopes to do a profession like yours, what advice do you have for me as I am about to go into the world? It's my final year of college.
Gosh, I'm so not worried for you. Based solely on your booking email, I'm very not worried for you. And the other thing is, like, you know, it's the people who are most passionate about this who will get a shot at it. So if you're already making it, thinking about it, if you're already attending Work It, if you're already brave enough to ask, you know, the podcasts you love to answer questions for you, I think that's so, I think you're set, you know, you're going to be fine. But the thing that I think helped me a ton was just continue. I think you should be open to not loving podcasts forever, that maybe your interest could change to film at some point. But if you really, really love podcasts and really, really love audio, then you should be listening to as much as you can get your ears on, even stuff you don't, that doesn't come easy for you to listen to.
Yeah.
And I think every time I go to a conference, I've always been really happy with how much listening I do, because then you can walk up to someone and say, I love how you did this. Why did you make that decision? And just the more I had to talk about with my heroes, the more I could learn from them and build those relationships, which, you know, it's a really small, welcoming industry and really accessible. And
yes, everyone is so nice.
Yes, it's the best. And once
consistently smart and warm and open.
Yeah, and then you make these relationships and you know these people for a decade. Suddenly a decade has passed and Al Letson's still your friend, and you're just so glad that you binged on his show so you could talk to him about it 10 years ago.
He's awesome. The reveal episode, I know you just talked about it when you talked to him about lying on top of the white supremacist, was crazy. I was taking a bath and I was like, oh, I'll just listen to this. This sounds interesting. I just had my mouth open the whole time. I practically drowned.
I like your description, lying on top of a white supremacist like it's a couch.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was shielding him, but like, I like the idea. It's like, oh, I'm just going to lean back right here.
That was so funny. Yeah, that like, sort of frames it as like an act of like strange performance protest of like he found a white supremacist and he just decided to lie on top of him to like demonstrate some sort of, you know, political art. Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
I'm excited for you. Talk to everyone at Work It. Get everything you can out of it. Oh, make business cards for Work It. I'm sure you already
I've made a business card. Yes. Good. Yeah. So I'm so excited about it. I'm excited about my business card. Yeah. Every time my head went out, I'm like, look at me. Do you feel like there's a mistake you recommend? Like not something good to do, but a place to venture into where like I'm pretty sure I'm not going to, where I'm pretty sure I would fail, but that something good might come out of it.
I don't think that there's anything. Yeah. A mistake to venture into. Oh, yeah. Pitch something. Pitch. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I could see. I try. You're on all the listservs already. So.
Yeah, I saw Women of the Hour had that.
Yeah.
Pitch where they pay $100 for a minute. That's crazy.
That's NPR rates. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, as a student, I'm just like, oh my god, that's crazy.
No, it's a really good rate. So yeah, especially if it scares you got to do it.
Yeah.
Okay,
maybe,
but this was so much fun.
Yeah, no, this has been so great. Thank you so much for talking to me. It's been awesome.
Oh, you're so welcome.
I wish you the best of days and the best of producing days, personal and producing days, both.
Same with you. Have fun at Work It.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. You too.
Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.
That's Andrea's Lindsay. That's so cool. So I will see you all next week on Pod Goddess. Pod Goddess is a production of Teej.fm, the podcast network of the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. Teej.fm, TEEJ.fm. Check us out there, along with all of our other amazing shows.